Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Go 24/7 podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again is Sonny Ship. Sonny, how are you doing today?
Feeling like a champ, man. Feeling like a champ. Monday, first feels like the first day back, the kids in school, even though it's been a week. But, you know, time flies when you're having fun, I guess, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And especially when you're covering a winning basketball team, right?
Like, oh, man.
It makes life so much easier.
You brought that good juju, man, to Baton Rouge.
Exactly. Everywhere I go, basketball teams just win. North Texas over here, winning, goes to the tournament. LSU men's and women's now both number 12 in the country in the AP poll that came out today about an hour ago when we're recording this. We focus on the men's. I'll touch on the women a little bit, the women's team a little bit later on. But let's start with the men because they had obviously a huge week. They beat Kentucky and beat Tennessee both at home, and we knew holding home court was going to be big coming off of that Auburn loss on the road. And so the win over Kentucky was, Sevier Wheeler, their point guard, goes down early. Ty Washington goes down late for them. But even outside of that, I thought they just played really, really well. So you had that win, and then you go to go against Tennessee, the number two defense in the country. And I was questioning if either team was going to break like 55, and LSU goes out and puts up 79 in a 79-67 win over the Volunteers. And just like that, LSU's hardest three-game stretch probably of the entire conference season is out of the way, and they end up 2-1. What are your overall takeaways? Where do you want to start with this team?
Well, I didn't know after the Auburn game. I was kind of wondering, okay, did I give LSU a little too much credit for, you know, for being, you know, with their athleticism, with their length? Because I thought that Auburn really gave LSU fits. Really gave LSU a lot of trouble from that perspective. But after watching LSU against Kentucky and Tennessee, I feel a lot better about that Auburn game. And now I'm leaning a lot more towards Auburn Arena, which was, man, that might have been the craziest atmosphere that I've seen at an SEC venue. It was just, it was really something. It was something. You almost hated to, it was so good, but you hated to be the, yeah, I guess, the whipping stone of it, you know. But I thought they played a lot more composed against Kentucky and Tennessee. Granted, they couldn't hit the side of a barn against Auburn. And I think at that point that they were just shell-shocked that A, they were shooting so bad and they couldn't find the basket. But then B, I think that Auburn might have surprised them a little bit coming out of the gate, but I think that arena probably had as big of an effect, and that being their first hostile environment they had to play in this year.
Yeah, Auburn's up to number 4, I believe, in the AP poll, and it feels about right. I mean, this is an Auburn team that if they win the SEC, they could very easily be a number 1 seed in the tournament moving forward. So with them, obviously, I think it's just a really tough matchup for LSU. I mean, Walker Kessler, Jabari Smith, their guards are really good. Like, the pressure LSU puts on other teams didn't bother Auburn that much, and it was at Auburn. So if they play again in Baton Rouge, which I don't think they do on the schedule, I don't remember, but yeah, they don't. Damn. But if they did play it at LSU, maybe it'd be a different outcome. But we've seen back-to-back home games where LSU has shot from 3, 9 of 23 against Kentucky, and against Tennessee, they shot 8 of 18. Like, both of those are hovering around 40%. And if you would have told me that they're shooting close to 40% in a conference game, I'm like, there's no way they're losing, right? So it's, that's probably the biggest difference, because defensively, while they're playing really, really well still, it's been the offense and it's been the three-point shooting specifically that's kind of turned around. And that's something that if they shoot this well, I don't see a lot of teams beating them.
Yeah, and you mentioned something else. You know, when you look at Auburn and you look at how Auburn really, you know, if you look at the score and if you look at the game play, at the way the game played, you left that saying, man, Auburn's a lot better than I thought they were. But LSU's also not as good as I thought they were. Mm-hmm. But a big missing piece, and I think we've seen it over these last two games, is not having Brandon Murray. Not having Brandon Murray. You know, I think we got spoiled last year by watching Cam Thomas, by watching someone who could come off the dribble, who could just pull up and shoot with someone in his face. And we kind of took that for granted a little bit. And then when you look at it this year, you've got Xavier Pinson, but he's pretty much a spot up set three-point shooter. Eric Gaines, I'm not gonna get into that since Shea's not here to defend his outside shooting ability.
He went 2-2 against Kentucky though. Eric Gaines.
Yeah, my son made sure to point that out to me when we were at the Tennessee game on Saturday. But you know, Brandon Murray gives them that. Brandon Murray gives that to where, you know, he's not great at pulling up off the dribble, but he's capable of it. And you think that he actually has a decent chance of making it. But more importantly than that, they can swing the ball around to him, and he can catch it without being set and without spotting up. He can catch it, make a move, and then pull up and come off the drip and come off and create a shot. So, you know, that was badly missing against Auburn. And I think that's an element of the offense that he brings that probably flew under the radar a little bit until that Auburn game really exposed that LSU doesn't really have, you know, anyone outside of him capable of doing that.
Yeah. And they need, and I've said this time and time again, they need Darius Days to do what he did against Tennessee. Is how he played against Tennessee is how he needs to play every game, right? 2 of 5 from three, 6 of 10 from the field, got to the free throw line 4 times, ends the game with 8 rebounds. He ends up fouling out, but in that game, everybody was in foul trouble, so it doesn't matter. But that's the type of Darius Days game you need. You don't need him taking 15 shots and 14 of them from three. A nice balance is really preferable for me with Darius. I mean, I know a lot of people want to see him post up, and I can see that because he does have some moves in the post, but I just don't, if he's not at the 3-point line, like to start the possession, the spacing of this team is just so weird. I mean, they don't have a ton of shooters outside of Murray and Days pretty much. I know Pinson's gotten better, like you said, but you know, those are the guys. And also Imani Wilkinson. I mean, the way he's shooting 4-3.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really big weapon for this team spacing wise. Cause going into the year or going into this conference play, and even after Auburn, we're like, this team can't shoot. How are they going to score the ball? Well, everybody's kind of picking up the slack. It hasn't been one guy that's really been like, oh, I'm going to make 5 threes a game. It's been like everybody be like, all right, you're going 2 of 4. You're going 2 of 5. You're going 2 of 6. And so that's the biggest development for me.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up about Monty Wilkinson because, you know, granted, he's only taken 23s, but he hit 9. He's hit 9 of them. And, you know, I don't by any means think that he's a 45% shooter the more that he jacks them up.
Yeah.
But I do think that he is someone – when you start looking at, okay, you know, how good is LSU? Is LSU the number 12 team in the country? Is LSU the number 9, 8, 7 team in the country? Once you start narrowing that gap a lot, you know, I mean, teams are really good. And yeah, then you have to start looking at, you know, start looking for flaws. And I think that, you know, if teams look at Monty Wilkinson as a guy who's going to give you 4 points a game, 5 points a game, well, then that means he's not shooting the ball much. I think that he needs to shoot the ball more. I think he's a guy that needs to put it up more from the perimeter, from beyond the arc. And by doing that, he's athletic enough and he's good enough dribbling the ball to where it's going to create some nice dribble and drive opportunities for him. He can dish him off. He's a pretty good passer. So I think his game is like, I really think that his game, I don't want to say is just waiting to explode, but I think it's really to go up several notches. And it's all, for me, it's all a matter of him getting comfortable enough to where he takes more shots and not just relies on being that scrappy guy who's going to give you 2, 3, 4 across the board at everything. And not that there's anything wrong with that, because teams need that. But I just think that he is too good of a player to not, you know, to not be more offensive minded.
Yeah. Another player who's kind of like that in my mind is Alex Fudge. And Fudge has been really good defensively for this team. And he's starting to do a little bit more off the bounce, off the dribble, you know, taking it to the hole, really attacking the offensive glass. I love what Alex Fudge has brought to this team just off the bench. I mean, you look at the bench unit. We haven't even talked about Tari Eason yet, right? And Tari Eason
10 minutes in.
Yeah. And like against Kentucky, he was fine. He led the team scoring with 13 points. It was like, all right, Tari's doing well, doing what Tari does. And then against Tennessee, he basically decided the game was over in the second half is what it felt like. He was like, all right, give me the ball. They ran out him off that little like down screen action to get like him he gets the ball on the move. And that's where Tari's at his best, when he can get the ball with some momentum. And he just started taking people to the rim. And then in transition, he's unstoppable, basically. I mean, what the trio of this Eason, Gaines, and Fudge bring off the bench. And now you sprinkle in Justice Williams just a little bit, not too much, but, you know, 4 or 5 minutes a game. I mean, the way that this bench plays is I struggle to find a better bench trio in the country than these three.
And I'm glad to see Justice Williams. I don't know if you remember that when I believe it was just you, Shay, and I on the pod. And it was when Shay said that he didn't think that Adam Miller would be a difference maker for this team or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And that's when I'd commented on that I thought that LSU was missing that one player. They were missing that ninth piece. They were missing potentially that 10th piece that Sharif O'Neal could give you. But I really thought that they needed that one extra piece to get in there. And Justice Williams, man, it's crazy that my son and I, we were watching the – it was Auburn, wasn't it, when he made his debut? Yeah, we were watching the Auburn game. And my son goes, who is number 11? And I started thinking, I was like, number 11? I was like, I have no idea. And he said, he's got long dreads. And I was like, man, I really have no idea, you know? Because I expected just a little baby face Justin Williams, you know, a kid who's supposed to be in high school. 18. And then I see the picture. I was like, well, man, I said, I think that's Justin Williams, but he also looks like he's about 30.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what I said. When I saw LT, I was like, is that Justice Williams? I was scrambling, looking like number 11, making sure. I was like, that's Justice Williams.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. But just seeing him, and don't get me wrong, he hasn't come out and he hasn't – I mean, he looks like an athletic freshman with length, with hustle, and he just gets out there. You can tell that his mind is still going 100 miles an hour and that the game is going really fast for him. But when he gets out on that floor, he plays with some defensive tenacity. He's not afraid to shoot, and he's another guy who's not afraid to dribble and then pull up with the jump shot, to where when it comes out of his hands, you know, you're like, oh, my goodness, why did he do that? And so you know it's going to get better the more comfortable that he gets. But I'm glad that you mentioned him, because, you know, I really felt that this team was one piece away from being that type that could be a 2, 3, 4 seed in the tournament.
Yeah, no, he definitely – he's a big – ninth man for them, and that's kind of why Will Wade said he wanted to play him, is because with all the, you know, whether it's COVID or injuries that happen, they need him to be ready. They need him to be ready to play if there's a random game where they don't have X player, like they might need him to go out and play 20 minutes, and he has to be ready at that point. And they don't have the depth outside of those eight to play. And I think we saw that when Brandon Murray went down, it was like, who are they going to turn to? You have to start Eric Gaines, but when you do that, then you have no guards off the bench, really, because you have Fudge and Eason, and both those guys are pretty much wing/forwards. So Justice Williams, it's his time to go. And he looked, I mean, he hit a couple shots against Auburn, and that's really all I needed to see to say, all right, he can play. And you could just tell when he has the ball, the game is still fast for him, but he looks like he's not out of control. He does, it looks like he's not a deer in the
headlights. He's got confidence to him.
Exactly.
He's got a level of confidence. So, and you mentioned that 20 minutes a game. That's exactly. I think he either gave him right over 20 minutes or just under 20 minutes at Auburn for that first time to be on the floor. And I think once Will Wade saw that Will Wade says, okay, this kid's supposed to still be in high school. He comes out here, gives me 20 minutes in this hostile environment on the road like this. I can count on him. And that's why you didn't see any hesitation in putting him in early against Kentucky and then also against Tennessee.
Yep. He played 5 minutes against Kentucky and 9 minutes against Tennessee. Let's talk real quick about Eric Gaines, because Eric Gaines played his best game of his college career, at least against Kentucky. And I gave it an A+ when I graded all the players. He ends up going 3 of 6 from the field, 2 of 2 from three, 4 steals as always, 3 assists, 3 turnovers as always. But the way he's just everywhere on the court. I don't have a great explanation for what makes him so great, but he's literally just everywhere on the court at all times. And it just seems crazy to me.
And just talking about Justice Williams and how it doesn't seem like that, you know, you can see that his mind's racing 100 miles an hour, but it doesn't look like it's too fast for him. Eric Gaines, he looks smooth out there. He's fast, so fast in what he does. And he's so fast that it looks like he's in control, but he's not. It's hard to pinpoint it, but you have to love the energy. You got to love the energy it brings. I mean, I know it frustrates the hell out of everybody else, as it does me, when, you know, you can't get an inbounds pass in, or you're 0 for 10 or 0 for 12 and you continue to jack up threes. But, you know, out of everyone on that roster, and granted, I don't think there's anyone that you could really look at and say, okay, he may be dogging it a little bit on either end of the floor. Eric Gaines, I think, is that one guy that every night you take the floor, you can count on that same energy, that energy that he brings to the floor. You can count on him bringing it.
Is there anything that, I mean, the last thing before we kind of move on here, I mentioned Tari Eason being amazing, but he's playing himself into like top 3, top 4, top 5 player in the entire conference at this point. Like one of the better players in the SEC. And that's, if he continues at this rate where he's putting up, like, he's not going to put up 24 a game, obviously, but if he's putting up 16, 17 a game in the SEC, and this is, like I said, this has been the tough stretch, right? Auburn's a great defense. Kentucky's a great team. Tennessee is a great defense. And he's putting up numbers against them. What's going to happen when he plays Missouri? Like, he might just go for 30 at this point if he gets enough minutes.
Well, I think probably one of the most dreaded words with college basketball is one and done. And I know that he's not a freshman, but I think that the way he's playing right now, that he's playing himself into one of those players that's one and done in Baton Rouge. Yeah. You know, with what he brings to the floor, with the game that he has translating to the next level, and then being so young and, you know, still having so much untapped potential, just gives him such a high ceiling that, you know, I think he's been phenomenal. And, you know, what Tari Eason is giving, you know, when you go back and when you think about the summer, and you've got Adam Miller on the what was it, the 18U Olympic team? 19, yeah, you know, when you heard about him, you know, making that team, that obviously to make that team, you got to be able to ball. You know, what Tari Eason's doing, granted, not the rebounds and stuff, but with the scoring and the, you know, and just having the impact that he's having, I kind of thought that Adam Miller would have that type of impact, you know. But Tari Eason has really eased the loss of Adam Miller a lot. Obviously, granted, you know, two different types of players completely. But when you just look at it from an impact standpoint, I didn't expect him to come in and give you 16 points and 8 boards a game. Yeah. You know, I didn't expect to see him give you the dynamic dunks that he's given you on top of people. I thought he was going to be good, but I kind of thought, you know, you've got a guy coming in from Cincinnati. I think he averaged just over 8 points and just over 5 boards a game last year, which is good for a freshman. But, you know, I didn't expect him to come in and double those numbers like basically he's doing right now. And so man, what a find by Will Wade. The general continues to just bring this talent in.
Yeah, to find him, because when they got him, I went and looked at his tape, obviously, and I was like, all right, this guy could play defense. Like, that's all he was to me, was a defensive player that could, like, had some athleticism. And like you said, finding him and then putting him in position and developing him to the player that he is now, I mean, a lot of that credit goes to him, but a lot of that credit also goes to Will Wade and his coaching staff. But that's what I'm going to be watching, is how high can Tari Eason climb, not only in like SEC Player of the Year races, but also draft boards. Like, yeah, he's borderline first round right now, if not 25 to 30 range in some mock drafts that I've seen. And that feels about right.
He's such a mismatch against really most of the people that he's gone against so far. He's such a mismatch when he gets the ball at the top of the key, and, you know, and a 6'8 or a 6'9 250 pounder, 260 pounder is asked to defend him. I mean, that's stealing. Yep. You know, I mean, he's just going to take that to the hole, and it's created such an element to the offense that you know, you don't really have with you know, you never really had that with Darius Days. You don't really have it with Afton. You've never really had that with someone who you would consider a post player, like
Trendon Watford. He's different than Watford in a lot.
Trendon Watford did give you that last year, but last year was really the first time that Trendon Watford had given you that. You know, yeah. And I think that really expanded his repertoire, because prior to that, he was pretty much a guy that, you know, you get the ball under the goal. But I think going into last year, he had that point forward in his head and, you know, wanted to, you know, see if he could be a Ben Simmons type and things of that nature. But yeah, man, Tari Eason's been fun to watch. So what's up with the we got some questions from the board.
Yeah, we got some questions from the board. I know. And I pulled five of them. There's like 15, 20 in there. I pulled five of them. Real quick, we have some questions on it anyways. Pinson status, Xavier Pinson goes down late in the Tennessee game. We heard right after the game, Will Wade say they scanned it and everything, and it was best case scenario pretty much before they went and did more extensive scans and everything. But it looks like he probably won't play against Florida on the road, but is maybe a game time decision to maybe even probable against Arkansas next week on Saturday. So that is great, because when he went down, I mean, you were there, Shay was there, I was there. When he went down, it was kind of like everyone just like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Like, please, just not now, not this, like not as they're beating Tennessee and they're playing well. So best case scenario, he'll be back. It looked like, I think they said bruised knee / sprained, maybe a light sprain MCL. I think that's what I saw. So hopefully it's not bad. Hopefully he's good by Arkansas, even though Arkansas is playing awful. So I don't even know if they'll need him to beat Arkansas, but still.
Funny story here from my experience in the Deaf Dome, or like someone had called it the Dark Dome. Man, I tell you what, it was dark the higher that you get up into PMAC. But funny story here, you know, Xavier Pinson goes down. The guy behind me, he was obviously, you know, sitting right behind me, he was obviously on a date with this young lady. And so Xavier Pinson goes down, and the guy goes, oh, man, I bet that's ACL. That's the ACL right there. And so the girl goes, oh, man, well, you know, maybe it's the MCL. And the guy goes, oh, no, I'm talking about the knee. It has to be ACL. There's no MCL in the knee. I just put my hand over my head like this. I looked over at my wife, and I was like, well, I can tell this date's not going to last very long.
It's over. He's trying to get her a breakdown.
Oh, man, I was like, oh, dude, she knows more than you do.
Oh, no. Yeah, man, she's got to move on. She can do better at this point.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. But everybody.
Good. That's good for Xavier. And when he came, I don't want to say jogging out, but, you know, leisurely walking back out to the bench with a couple of minutes, I think it's about a minute and a half or so left to play, I think that kind of gave you an idea right there that, okay, you know, this injury's not gonna, you know, it's not season ending, it's not an ACL, it's not Adam Miller 2.0, and so I think that gave everyone a lot of, you know, a lot more comfort than they had about 5 minutes prior to that point.
Yeah, and credit to the crowd throughout the game, not obviously not just when Xavier came back, but man, that crowd was great.
Great atmosphere, man. Excellent. Great atmosphere. Great environment. You know, I think that they I think that they really have to do some upgrades to that arena to make it a lot more basketball friendly. They've got to include the lighting. But as far as the fan support, I hadn't seen a I hadn't seen a packed house like that in a while. But then also just to see the enthusiasm, you know, and not like it was super loud or super ruckus or super crazy or anything, but just the crowd that was there, you could just see they were into it. They were enjoying it. And it was a good atmosphere given what they have to work with.
Yeah. And when they had to get loud, the crowd got loud. They knew when to get loud. They knew when to cheer. So
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, let's get on to questions here. First one is from Mac Wood, and there were a couple people that sent this as well. But Sharif O'Neal update, please. He's been in uniform the past three games. And we don't have to go into too much depth about this because I don't have a solidified answer or a recent answer. Last I had heard, he'd been practicing. He'd been, you know, kind of moving up the levels. You know, there's like one-on-one, three-on-three, five-on-fives where you can like continue to move up. So he's continuing to move up the ladder. He is dunking in warmups. He looks fine in warmups. So, you know, this might be a Justice Williams situation where as soon as he's cleared, you might just see him on a random, like, Saturday against Arkansas where he just goes out there and plays 5 minutes. Like, who knows? But I think he's close. If I had to guess, and this is just a guess, I'd guess 2 weeks, two, three weeks. But at this moment, it's – well, we'll get into Efton Reed in a second, but like the front court, I feel really good about their rotation right now with those three. So I don't know if you need to put them in unless if it's foul trouble right now.
I think foul trouble. I think foul trouble would be the thing. And you know, the thing I wonder with Sharif too right now is that how much of it is in his head. Maybe, you know, because that's a pretty big mental hurdle that you have to clear. Because in the back of his head, I'm sure he's thinking like, man, you know, one more injury and my dreams are done.
Yeah,
you know, that this is so I wonder how much of that's playing into that. But I'm with you. I think we see him probably once you start getting into that fourth or fifth week of SEC play.
Yeah. All right. Next question from Spec Chaser. I'm going to turn this into like a bigger conversation, but he asked, Efton Reed looks like a second year player. Is he expected back? And I've said yes since early in the season. I just the way he's a back-to-the-back post player, which in the NBA we've seen it's a lot more difficult to make it in that way. I saw Charles Bassey at Western Kentucky in Conference USA for a long time, and he finally got drafted in the late second round this past year. So, or maybe it was middle second round, but regardless, it's just tough. And I feel like he would have had to have had a much bigger impact on this team for me to think he's a one and done, even though he is a five star. And I think he warrants a five star. I think he's playing like at an elite level for a freshman, but his skill set is just not something that translates to the NBA.
He's still a baby. He's still a baby physically. And like you said, he doesn't have the skill set to where he can take people, you know, 6'9", 6'10", off the dribble in the NBA. He's a back up to the basket type of guy. And I think that next year, once he grows into his body, he fills out and as he gets stronger, he builds more confidence and he starts to get comfortable, then you're going to see Efton Reed really be I think he'll be a force in the NBA. I mean, in the SEC. I don't think that his skill set says one and done, but with kids these days and age, I mean, you know, you never know. But I would be surprised unless he just saw a major uptick in production in his play. I'd be surprised if he was a one and done.
Yeah, and just to go to his play through conference play to this point, he hasn't been – I mean, he's been in foul trouble the last two games. And against Auburn, he was going against Walker Kessler, who he was never going to score against. So we haven't seen much like positive from him to this point. And I think he's better than what he's shown, but against really good teams, which they've played so far, you wonder like how effective can he be on either end. And you have
he's a Tari, role player right now.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And he's you have a role player.
Tari Eason off the bench who can come in and be a star. Right. And so Will Wade's like, all right, well, Efton's starting out there and we want to get him touches. We want to try to get some easy points, but at the end of the day, you have Tari Eason who you can just slide in there. So
right.
I agree though. Next year my expectations of Efton Reed will be very, very high. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how he does.
What Tari Eason's doing this year from 16-8 is what I could see Efton Reed possibly getting up to next year.
Yes, exactly. All right, this question, I'm going to rephrase it because we have it from like three different people. Tiger Law and Cajun Tiger have both sent in a similar type question. But basically, it's about offensive improvement and what's improved to the point to where LSU is scoring 79 points on Tennessee after even in non-conference play, if we remember, they had a lot of stretches where they couldn't score. Is there anything that stuck out to you as far as something going very different through conference play or through the last two games, to be specific?
Well, I think against Tennessee, the reason that they were able to build that, did it ever? I think it did get to 20, didn't it?
It was at 19.
I knew it flirted with 20. I didn't know if it ever got to that point. But I think the big reason why it got to that point against Tennessee is they were hitting threes. You know, they were efficient from beyond the arc. 8 of 18, like you said. I want to say they were 6 of 10 in the first half, if I'm not mistaken. And so, you know, 2 of 8 over the last half. But I mean, if you're hitting 6 of 10, and there really wasn't a point. I mean, maybe after a couple of minutes of that one, I don't think there was ever really a point to where you felt like Tennessee had a good handle on the game. I think it was always a point to where, man, LSU could, you know, Tennessee's going to need a timeout here. You know, even before that, right around that first official timeout at around the 16-minute mark, you kind of started getting the feeling like, because I remember there was a point right after that to where I said, okay, Rick Barnes needs to get a TO right here. And I think that's what pushed it up to 7, maybe 9, 11. And then they ended up getting a timeout right there. But for me, it starts with the three-point shoot in Matty B.
I agree. I definitely agree. I talked about how Darius Days, I liked his shot selection against Tennessee. I thought Pinson has been, while he's turned the ball over a good amount, and I think he's kind of struggled with the size that he's faced early on, I still like some stretches where he looks in control. He's shooting the ball well. And then it's kind of just what I talked about with three-point shooting. It's kind of been like that for all the entire offense. It's like everybody's just doing a little bit more. And it sounds cliche, I guess, but it's really that way. It's not just Tari Eason taking over every single game against Kentucky. He had 13, but everybody else was chipping in their own. So if they're able to play in transition, obviously a lot of their offense comes from their defense. So that will continue to be the case. And if they can do that, then in the half court, it's not going to look pretty, but they get the job done more times than not because of what they can do off the dribble. So, I'm happy with this offense. They've jumped up a little bit in like the ratings and rankings and stuff. So we'll see how they continue to fare. Next from LSU Tiger 76. What does Wade need to do to make this team better? So improvements, basic. What's your wish list right now for improvements?
Oh man,
no, I'm pretty happy, honestly. I'm like, if they just keep doing this, this is a hell of a team in the SEC.
Yeah, I think if. For me, I think, and I've got a couple of things going through my head, but I think what I'll settle on to where if there's one thing that I think that could really make this team better, when I'm with you, I already think it's pretty damn good, but I think it's convincing Wani Wilkinson to shoot the ball more. You know, and it may even be a case to where he may shoot the ball more and he may go out and make, you know, two of his next 20 three pointers. But I think convincing him that, you know, you're a little better offensive player than you give yourself credit for. Go out there, you know, don't worry about it. Get out there and go do some things, you know, go do some things, shoot the ball a little bit more. And if it's, even if it's not him, but it's someone else stepping up to where Brandon Murray's not playing, or Brandon Murray's having a night. If Xavier Pinson gets in foul trouble, if, you know, if Eric Gaines is in foul trouble, or whatever it is, just Wani Wilkinson being more involved in the offense, I think is probably the one thing that I could put my finger on and say, I'd like to see more of this.
Yeah.
What say you?
For me, it's going to be the turnovers, and I know Will Wade is going to probably has a sign up not in the PMAC, but where they practice, being like, stop turning the damn ball over. But that's what I'm going to go to, because they still had, 15 turnovers against Kentucky and 16 against Tennessee. And that's going to happen. Like, I've tried to express to people on the board and on social media and everything, they're going to turn the ball over and they're going to miss shots because of how kind of fast they play and how they're trying to play the game. So you have to kind of live with it to a degree, but there are still those turnovers that make you tear your hair out. So like on the inbounds pass when they throw it away, or still those Eric Gaines ones where he's doing too much, or Darius Days where he throws the ball away. So they can always clean those up. That'll always be a talking point for me moving forward, is the turnovers, because that's kind of what feels like that's the only thing that kept like Tennessee and Kentucky even in the game, really. It's like, if LSU stops beating themselves on offense, these teams can't score on them. Like, their defense is the best in the country. Kentucky and Tennessee, while they're good, they struggle to score on LSU in the half court. And so if you just stop giving up those fast break points and those easy buckets and those opportunities, this team is going to be damn good. So,
and they got to hit their free throws too.
Yes.
Miss way too many free throws against Tennessee.
Yes. Yes. That is also true with the women. Actually, the women shot free throws really well last night. So, but still, that's a LSU problem right now. All right. Last from Son of Gris. Prediction on how far this team goes in the tournament. He says, make it interesting. And I don't know how to make it interesting.
I know.
I'm not going Final Four yet.
Yeah, no.
The thing is, the defense is going to, and we've seen great defenses make runs in the tournament, but they're going to have to score the ball well.
Yeah.
Like, when the tournament comes, you can't have games like a random game where they go 2 of 16 from three. They're going to lose. First round, obviously, I think they'll be huge favorites. Second round, let's say they're a 3 seed or a 4 seed. Let's say they're a 3 or 4 seed. At that point, you're playing a 5 or 6 seed in the second round, and that's going to be a quality. Let me see. I have the AP poll right now, and that's going to be a team like Tennessee will be a 5 seed. Let's say Alabama, you know, Illinois, Seton Hall, Texas Tech, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And that's the second round, and then you go to the third round, and you're playing, you know, a 2 or a 1 seed most likely. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I'll say Sweet 16 still at this moment.
Yeah, and I'm with you. It's hard to say, oh, this is a Final Four team, Elite Eight, you know, Sweet 16, what have you. I do, you know, one thing to add, one caveat is that Dickie V over on Saturday said that he had LSU as his 7th best team that played on Saturday. And so, you know, I think that kind of gives you an idea that, okay, you're right now dealing with a team capable of making a Sweet 16, capable of making the Elite Eight. But look, if you're capable of making either of those, you're capable of making the Final Four too, you know. But yeah, I'm in the same. But I do think that, you know, if you go back and if you look at the Sweet 16 team that LSU had back when,
2019.
Tremont Waters, Nas Reed, and those guys. I do think that this is a deeper team, and that this is probably a better team than that one. But, you know, like I said, it's just so tough, man, to say, oh, if, you know, how good you – I do think that, you know, when you start looking at it, okay, which teams do you expect to be playing on that second weekend of the tournament? I think LSU right now is one of those easily.
Yep, exactly. We can end on that. And I'm interested to see how high LSU can climb. Like I said before, the upcoming schedule, Florida, I think Florida's a good team. That's going to be a tough game on the road. Like, Florida's a solid team. I've watched.
And not an easy environment either.
No, not an easy
environment. That's another good basketball environment in the league.
Yep, I watched them play Alabama. And then you have Arkansas at home. Arkansas has been falling off a cliff. So we'll see. They probably beat Arkansas. Then you go at Alabama, at A&M, or I'm sorry, at Alabama and at Tennessee as those next two games. So those are the next four games: Florida, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee. And that's kind of the seven-game stretch, the end of the seven-game stretch that I wrote about earlier this season. So we'll see how they do. It'll be interesting to see on the road if they can get it going, because still, to this point in the season, they've only played one true road game. And that was
not a good experience.
And it was not fun for anybody.
No, it was not.
So we'll see how they do moving forward. But we thank y'all for listening. You can check out all of our content at go247.com. If you want to leave a question for a future podcast, we're going to do football podcasts, more basketball podcasts every single week. So you can check that out on our board. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow Sonny at SonnyShip247 and me at MatthewBruni_ and Go247 is at Go247. So we thank y'all for joining us and we'll talk to y'all later.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.